Planes, trains, and automobiles have changed the world more than we could know. They basically rewrote the rules about where us humans and our stuff could go, and how long it might take us to get there. Now it seems like the sky is anything but the limit. Spacecraft continue to push the bounds of human knowledge, while drone technologies have profoundly changed life on Earth. But there's one chapter in our transportation story that was written a long time ago, but still hasn't come to pass the way people thought it would. Think of George Jetson's Daily Driver, or Bruce Willis's ride in The Fifth Element. That's right, flying cars. If ever there was a symbol of futuristic freedom of movement, they're it. 75 years ago, Henry Ford predicted flying cars would be the next big thing. Our guest today says the time of sky cars has finally come. Among many things, he's the inventor of the sky car, and it's more technically known as a vertical takeoff and landing vehicle. Supporters say he might be one of the greatest inventors of our time. He already holds something like 43 U.S. patents. Critics say the sky car amounts to a Sisyphean effort at best, and at worst, a potential fraud against investors. Our guest grew up in rural Canada, then went to a trade school and became a certified plane mechanic. He then earned a master's of engineering and a doctorate of aerodynamics from McGill University in Montreal. In the 60s and 70s, he was a professor of mechanical and aeronautical engineering at the University of California, Davis, where he helped develop the aeronautical engineering program there. In 1983, he founded his latest company, Mahler International. The company has held contracts with public agencies like NASA, the U.S. Army, the Navy, the Air Force, even the California Department of Transportation. These contracts included the development and deployment of numerous unmanned aerial vehicles. Now, Dr. Paul Mahler joins us to talk about the future of flying cars and his designs for a sky car. Dr. Mahler, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
It's my pleasure to be talking with you today. I noticed you hold something like 43 U.S. patents. Before we get into sky cars, what are some of the other things you've invented?
Well, one of the key elements in the flying car, and the reason we really haven't had a flying car, is because we haven't had a power plant that was able to do what we needed. We needed an extremely small, very powerful engine. It couldn't weigh very much because otherwise that would be your payload. You wouldn't be able to take off. And so our company's been developing engines now for almost 40 years, moving them to a higher and higher power at a less and less weight. And that's sort of the key. It's like a hummingbird. It has a very high metabolism because it requires a large amount of power in a very small package. And that's been, the engine now has become a big part of our future. We have literally millions of engines that are we have requests for. Excuse me, requests for.
You mentioned this, the engine that you have designed and patented, the rotor power engines or rotary engines. I really want to get to those, although you mentioned something else a little higher on my list here. The hummingbird. How has the humble hummingbird changed your life? How could it change all of our lives?
Well, it changed mine because I grew up in a rural area in Canada, the side of a mountain, and as a kid, I had a gift, really, I would say, of rescuing a couple of hummingbirds that got caught in one of my father's sheds. And as I let them go, I was completely awed by this hovering. Even though they were essentially worn out from beating their wings, they hovered for a second, then literally disappeared. And I thought, that's a great way to get to school when you're in the middle of a rural part of Canada. And it's pretty much been my inspiration since then to try and replicate the hummingbird.
And I want to get to those mechanics. In some ways, these flying cars, it's emblematic of a future that never came to pass. Why do so many people, your critics, say that it's impossible?
Well, I think really just because it's been such a long time and we've been promised it so many times along the road, it is not something, you know, it's a product that requires an awful lot of skill, far beyond my skill. I've had to bring in experts. I hired one of the people that developed the stability system for the space shuttle. We've had, you know, top people involved to make this happen. And as I said earlier, the whole issue of developing an engine is a very long and costly process. Then you get your stability system because a human can't really fly these vehicles. They don't lend themselves to airplanes which have natural stability. You really have to build in the stability, and you have to do it electronically. So you end up with a lot of other very big problems to make this, what you think is a quite simple problem, work. And that's been the issue. It's the length of time, the difficulty raising money. As you can imagine, raising money for a flying car has not been easy to do. So there's many. I've taken on many other careers over this period of time to raise the capital to continue to have this program go forward.
And the design that that you're saying is close. You just said a human can't really fly these vehicles. Are you designing them to be manned? Who does the test flights?
Well, they could be manned or unmanned because, as you said earlier, we've delivered an enormous number of very complex drone vehicles 20 years ago when we weren't even thinking about it. So we're really being ahead of the curve in the unmanned, and it isn't very difficult to take an unmanned version and make it a manned version. So our movement is very logical, but at the same time, when it's manned, you still need all this electronic backup to make sure that this is easy to fly. We don't want an astronaut to try to have to fly this kind of vehicle. We want somebody who's basically just wanting to get from A to B without a lot of skill involved.
How does a sky car differ from a helicopter?
Well, the key element in physics is that the helicopter moves a lot of air at low speed, which means it requires a small amount of power to do that. That's just a basic law of physics. Whereas we have a very compact vehicle, which means we're moving a smaller amount of air at high speed, and that requires a lot more power. And that's really the key element. If you want to make it small and practical and roadable, I'm not saying it's really an automobile, but it has the ability to travel from, say, your home to a vertiport, or perhaps at some point take off from your home, certainly be stored in your garage if that's your desire. That puts great limits on the ability of the vehicle to take off without a great deal of power. And that's, again, comes us back to this issue of power, which drives everything that we do.
You just mentioned vertiport. That's like a landing, takeoff landing pad.
Yeah, it's like an extension of the word heliport, which might be, I think you'll see in the future, these kind of vertiports, a number of them in any city, and you'd drive your vehicle, if you owned it, you'd drive it from your home to a vertiport and take off. But that's not my vision. I think our vision, my future, or our future, is that you will rent these vehicles.
So it takes a tremendous amount of power to get the small amount of air traveling at a very high speed for a vertical takeoff and landing. Where does that power come from in the sky car?
Well, we developed these engines, which are a variation of the rotary engine. A rotary engine is considered by some propulsion engineers as the greatest invention. And again, I say invention, I'm thinking of power plant invention of the 20th century. It never really found a home because I don't think it's the right engine for automobiles. And if it isn't for automobiles, then it doesn't have a lot of support. But it is the perfect engine. In fact, I would argue that if there was no rotary engine had been invented by Dr. Felix Weichel in Germany, I wouldn't have a sky car. We then took that product and spent a great deal of money and time making it much more powerful and making it a lot lighter. And so we have an engine you can hold in the palm of your hand that'll drive a car down the highway at 50 miles an hour.
Wow. We are talking right now with Dr. Paul Mahler, inventor of the sky car, founder of Mahler International, a company that's developing this vertical takeoff and landing vehicle, among many other flying machines and engines. If you have questions for Dr. Mahler, bring them to us, 800-838-3760, or email jx@jeffnet.org. I'm Emily Curitan. Now, Dr. Mahler, you're just talking about how small these engines can be. When you're test flying these things, what's to stop a strong gust of wind from destabilizing the whole car if it's so hummingbird-like?
Well, really, you put your finger on a very important point, that these vehicles don't have any natural stability. I mean, you could call them neutrally stable, but things can happen fast in a very bad way. And so you have to have the system itself very responsive. It's an electronic brain, but you want more than one brain because we know that electronics can fail. And so we have 8 computers, each computer driving one engine, so that you can lose an engine or you can lose a computer. And that's really the key. You really have to make something that's going to be used by the public in a broad way, has to be what would be called foolproof. And we've been flying these vehicles now in various forms from 1967. Of course, very crude ones at the beginning. As time went along, they became more and more practical. But we've never had an accident during that program, and that's pretty uncommon in this area of vertical takeoff and aircraft, where typically a number of people are killed in the test program. For instance, the Osprey V-22, they lost 32 people during the test program. So I think it speaks for itself that we have developed a very safe approach to this kind of future transportation.
Yeah, you hit on one of my questions I was sort of being guarded about, which is, you know, how many people have been killed while testing these prototypes, but it sounds like none.
Well, none in our case, but if you look at the vast programs, we've literally lost hundreds of test pilots in this field in particular, because if you're flying a conventional airplane and something goes wrong, you can bail out. But if you're testing a vertical takeoff aircraft and it fails, you really don't have that option.
So there's a few models of what we could sort of broadly call flying cars. Could you describe what the sky car looks like?
Well, we have two versions that serve different purposes. We have what we call the New Aero, which is the best way to describe it is to say it looks just like the Jetson vehicle, for anybody who remembers the Jetsons. And then we have a more streamlined version that's designed for high speed. If you want to go fast, you've got a sort of function follows form or form follows function. It needs to be streamlined if it's going to go quickly. And you lose some practicality because there's always a trade-off. But those two forms, a utility, fun kind of vehicle, and a high-speed commuter vehicle. And the high-speed commuter vehicle we call the sky car. And we make or will make or have made single-person, two-person, four-person, and we will be making a 6- and 9-person version of that vehicle.
Let's talk about the newer just for a second. What you're describing is more like the minivan of flying cars, or the more utilitarian version. What's its top speed?
We haven't tested it that because we've been a little nervous until we tested the full-size wind tunnel, but we think top speed's around 100, and you'd probably cruise to 75. So you'd use this vehicle for rescue. We have a rescue version that could take somebody out of a side of a burning building, border patrol, recreational vehicle, utility vehicle around a farm, sort of an aerial jeep, you could call it that. So high speed is not an important part of that. They're just the ability to get around in a three-dimensional world, which is exciting in itself.
Now, the other version, the sky car, top speed of 350 miles an hour, sounds like an infrastructure nightmare. Is there a highway or a skyway able to even accommodate these things? What is the FAA telling you about this?
Well, you've asked a very complicated question because it's got so many different components to it. I'd like to address the one of thinking about collisions, because that always comes to mind immediately. Somebody says, well, what are we going to do when we have these vehicles going every direction? And what they forget is what we've already accomplished. We have driverless cars on the streets of San Francisco. That's an environment infinitely more complex than the one in the air. And secondly, people don't realize that we have a very controlled airspace up there where the airliners going on these virtual highways every day, and they don't run into each other. If they hit something, it's usually a civilian airplane, but it's a very controlled environment. So that's not really an issue. I think we have the ability, and there's certainly people working on it, to create a virtual highway system that where you get in this vehicle, you code in your destination, and you're taken there, just like our unmanned vehicles. You're a passenger, you play computer games, you read, you sleep, whatever, and you're delivered from point A to point B. And you really can't change it during that process. I mean, it really is out of your hands. You could change your destination, but you're not going to control this vehicle because we don't want the human element to be in it, to be involved in your flight if we can avoid it.
Yeah, I mean, eliminating the human element from one flight, though, doesn't that mean you have to eliminate the human element from every flight, everything in the sky, in order to, you know, prevent that unknown, very human element from causing an accident?
Well, I would say certainly for the majority, but we could have things like off-road regions where people can just have fun and do almost anything, just like we have motocross, and we have a lot of off-road kind of activities in America. We certainly kind of have off-airway activities, but for the most part, yes, the answer is that you're going to have everybody who's in the air controlled by a very redundant system, meaning that you have many different backups, and we have many of those backups in place today, but they're not in all light planes, so we still have light planes running into one another and other things happening. But when I look at it from a complex point of view, that's a relatively simple system compared to trying to make driverless cars or putting a man on the moon, which is an order of magnitude, two orders of magnitude more complex than the flying car.
We have a few minutes left here with Dr. Paul Mahler, inventor of the Sky Car. Your comments and questions are welcome. 800-838-3760 or email us jx@jeffnet.org. Paul, how have sort of the mainstreaming of drone technology and of the private drone industry, how has that changed the regulatory outlook for your projects?
Well, I think that's a very exciting development. We've already been in touch with the FAA, and we've made the argument if you're letting a lot of these drones fly around at 400 feet, which is their upper limit at the moment, unmanned, certainly putting a person on board would be a very simple extension of that. And so, and we've had a good response, but of course the FAA, the FAA's major goal is to make sure that people don't get hurt. And so we've still got to go through a phase of demonstrating the redundancy we have in this vehicle that makes it possible to prevent accidents from occurring or to have the vehicle fail in a way that's called fail-safe. So we are working every day with the FAA. We've had great cooperation, and I think the drone industry is exciting. It's exciting for us for many reasons. Number one, it's reduced the cost of computers, a flight computer that does all kinds of things to a point that's almost incidental in the cost of the vehicle, whereas that was one of our primary costs for a long time was the artificial stabilization system. Now we have eight of them on board for a few thousand dollars, which would have cost a few hundred thousand dollars 5 years ago.
And we've really been focusing on how this car could make it to your average George Jetson, basically. Have you already sold the design or developed one for military purposes?
Well, pretty much, in a sense, we've already delivered to the military unmanned versions of our technology. We haven't delivered a really big one, but we've delivered vehicles to the military that can carry 100 pounds, so making it carry 1,000 pounds is a relatively minor extension. But certainly, we've never been driven by military applications. I've been driven by my own personal desire to fly this and to be the test pilot, which unfortunately my stockholders aren't too happy about. But, you know, when I've spent this much of my life doing this, I think that I don't really want to end my life this way, but I certainly want to have the opportunity to enjoy the few flights I get the opportunity to be a part of.
Well, I mean, if it's what you love, maybe not such a terrible way to go. How many test flights do you think you've done of what could rightly be called a flying car?
Well, a lot, but really short ones. Typically, you're just going up there to determine something, some kind of parameter or some kind of operating element of the engines or something. I would say we had over 200 flights of the New Era. We've only had probably a dozen so of the Sky Car because we've gone back to put the New Era into production, and we have our first production aircraft almost ready to fly this spring. And that would be the vehicle that would go to market later in the year, next year.
And I assume there's videos of the test flights online and on Mahler International's website?
Yes, you can see that. And actually, if you went to, I recommend someone might just put Sky Car into Google Sky Car, and you'll get, you know, 400,000 references to the Sky Car, not all will be specifically to us, but at the same time, you could see numerous videos, real flights or animated flights, because we have a large following of people who are very skilled at imitating the sky car and making it do things that we haven't done yet.
Now, you've put a pretty short timeline on potentially rolling this out to some kind of consumer. What's the biggest hurdle in the way between now and a sky car at a dealership near you?
I think it's finding the right partner, because I don't think that, I've spent so many decades on this, and I know that to move to the next level is a very, very big decision from an economic point of view. And so we're clearly going to find a partner that that can take us to the next level of production.
Well, what problem would money solve? What's the problem before you that
just,
you need money
primarily
for?
Primarily the kinds of costs associated with FAA approval, a production line, aircraft or not. Although our vehicle is very inexpensive relative to, say, a helicopter. I mean, a helicopter will cost many times more to produce than ours because we don't have any of that complexity. It's still a new field. There's a lot of regulatory issues that go with it, production issues. And so a trivial amount of money, I'm not talking about a large amount of money. I'm just saying from my point of view, it's a large amount of money as a person who has to make that money often by going and creating other projects or products. But in terms of the world's market, it's almost trivial, and we could change the world entirely in the process.
And what's the ballpark on how much an individual sky car costs to produce or what you'd want to sell it for, either one?
Well, that's a kind of a continuum. It's like asking what the car would cost at the turn of the century.
Uh-huh.
In today's dollars, that's probably $250,000. And I would say that's where we are initially, but that's probably more because that's what the market will bear. We're obviously trying to recover an enormous investment. And so at the beginning, yes, $250,000, but we can show very easily that this will be down to not that much more, say the newer, much more than a mid-sized car.
Well, Dr. Paul Mahler, thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. It's been a pleasure to hear about the sky car, and I look forward to a future with flying cars.
Thank you.